Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. We have with us a guest that we uploaded as an episode on December 4th, Nikki Bruno. Thank you, Nikki. And Nikki was here talking about how to make divorce and all of the changes that divorce creates in your life as a new epic comeback, because that's what Nikki does. She's a coach, and that's what she teaches. And talking to her after that, because I'm getting to know her better and better and loving her as a resource for all of you, we talked about something that happens in every single divorce, especially if there are children. And that is the shift in relationships. Some we retain, some we don't retain. And just the shift in relationships is so problematic in divorce and to the continuation of our lives that I thought it important to put an episode together about that. So thank you, Nikki, for your ideas, and thank you for coming back. So relationships shift in different ways when people get divorced. And many people that are friends of the divorcing couple think they have to take sides. Haven't you all experienced this? So the whole experience of speaking to the divorcing couple becomes uncertain and confusing. We have family, friends, and coworkers who have to be told. At some point, we do have to describe what's going on. So we have two categories. We have our personal relationships that we have to deal with, and even, for instance, grandparents. I mean, that becomes very difficult when grandparents exist versus couple-based relationships. So, Nikki, let's start with you. What were some of your experiences with any of the aforementioned relationship shifts, and what did you learn from these experiences?
Judy, first of all, thank you for engaging with me on this topic. I am so excited about this second podcast that we've put together. And I love this topic because it gives me an opportunity to talk about relationships and how they shift both negatively and positively. And so when I talk about my own experience, I want to emphasize that we're not just talking about relationships being harmed or the fabric of our relationships being changed, which does happen in the wake of and during a divorce, but we're also talking about potentially positively shifting relationships in our lives. And so to answer the question that you just asked, Judy, I wanted to say, first of all, that some of the shifts that happened during and after my divorce, which was, by the way, a 3-year-long process, and it was a high-conflict, litigated divorce. Number one, I lost a few friends. And I think in the divorce process, it would be difficult to go through without perhaps relationships falling away somehow, in addition to the marriage itself. I think that would be an enlightened, amicable, and unusual and rare divorce process. So I will say for me, I did lose a few friends. Some of them were expected. Some of them weren't a surprise because, for example, they were friends of my husband's way before they were friends of mine. And it was the expectation, my expectation, that his friends former to our marriage were going to be his kind of primary supporters. And I mean that in a positive way, because when you go through a divorce, your friends are going to support you, hopefully. Otherwise, they're probably not your friends. So that was expected, that some of the friends that my husband came into the marriage with rallied around him. And then there were a few friends who I lost who were very unexpected and extremely painful for me to lose. And I wasn't really sure why it was happening or what was going on. And I have some more insight about it now upon reflection, but I didn't know what was happening at the time. And one of the most painful experiences and examples of that was there was a couple that we were friends with as a couple. And so we became friends while we were both married couples. And it was especially painful because I thought that because we were so close, I thought that these two friends, they had a pretty intimate view of my relationship with my husband. And I thought that they were going to have empathy as well as support for both of us. And it didn't really ultimately happen that way. So I found that really, really painful and really confusing. And we never got to really talk it through. So that's still somewhat a mystery to me.
So I was going to ask you that. Do you now know why? But not really, right?
Not really. And in this particular case, I reached out to both of them and I wrote a letter and I explained part of how I was feeling and how I felt hurt and confused. And I also explained in my letter that I had felt at the time that I sort of felt like they put me on the defensive, as if I had to tell my side of the story and explain myself about why I had initiated the divorce. And at that time, that felt like a lot of pressure. And it was also heartbreaking to me because I didn't feel that I should have to defend myself and defend my actions, even though I had taken a very dramatic, I guess you could say, action.
Dramatic I felt action in that filing for divorce.
In the filing for divorce, okay. Exactly. But I didn't feel that I should be put in a position, especially since they knew my husband at the time so well. I didn't want to go into those kinds of details and feel like I was being put on the witness stand about why I had filed for divorce or what had led up to it or anything like that. I didn't want to go into that, partly because I knew I didn't want to do anything that might hurt their relationship with my husband. And so that is still somewhat of a mystery to me because they acknowledged that they received my letter, but really never responded to it. So it's still a bit of a mystery and I still feel sad. So that was one of my experiences with a relationship shift. Another experience that I really am excited to mention because it's so concrete and I hope that it will help with understanding among your listeners, Judy, is that I had a few friends who were very close friends of mine and they were clearly being supportive of me, but they were also, I found, distancing themselves from me. And I don't have scientific proof of this. Except in one case, I did talk to my friend about it, and she said that this had happened. The way that some of my friends reacted to my filing and going through a divorce, some of it depended on their own marital status and their own level of satisfaction in their own marriage. So I had some friends, especially who were unhappy in their own marriages and who might even have been considering divorce themselves, who really distanced themselves from me because it brought up extra pain and maybe even extra, I don't know, maybe some kind of envy or some kind of longing or something in them that was really clamoring for liberation and freedom within their own relationship. I could tell that they were distancing themselves from me because of that.
So were these divorced people or still married, maybe going into divorce?
These people, there were three or four of them that I'm thinking about, were and still are married.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do you think that they're questioning their own marriages?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Just in the same way, for example, let's say that you are going through a process of infertility and one of your best friends just got pregnant.
And had triplets,
right. The point that I'm making is that your friends, the people in your life, are going to respond to your divorce in large part based on where they are in their own place in their life. So what I'm trying to say is it's not necessarily about you. It's probably not about you. More about them. And
keep going.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is different people have different values about marriage and about divorce based on their spiritual background, based on their upbringing, based on whether their parents got a divorce or not, which is another thing I was going to mention. If you're going through a divorce process and you tell, let's say, a given friend, and your friend has an unexpected reaction, it could have to do with, let's say, their parents got divorced when they were children and they felt completely abandoned because one of their parents left. They may have a strong triggered reaction that may even trigger some trauma when you talk to them about your own divorce. And so I'm bringing this up, number one, hopefully to give listeners some relief and to know it's not about you. It's to some extent, it's about your listener. And then number two, the importance of striving for empathy when you are delivering the news and talking about your divorce, trying to be empathetic and to know that the people you talk to about it might have some unexpected reactions based on their own history.
Okay, I totally understand where you're coming from. People do look at other people's experiences through the prism of their own lives. I mean, that's normal. We all do that. But for those of you listening that have friends going through divorce, possibly you're not yet and you're listening to this to set yourself up to do it, the hardest thing in the world, and I find this as a mediator, is you have to sit without judgment. It's very difficult to do that. But I think it's best that we all strive to sit without judgment. But you brought up an excellent point, and that is, so if those you are telling are considering divorce or struggling with the idea because of religious and cultural and familial issues and are not happy in their marriage, yes, they could have an adverse reaction to you. Why are you doing this? I'm not doing this. Why can't you hang in there? I'm hanging in there. It's a kind of a natural thing for people. And I know we talked about this for a minute. My divorce was very different than yours. And I've said this many times on different podcasts. Mine was so minimal, it's not even funny. No kids. We made the same money. Nothing to divide. We didn't argue. It was the saddest year of my life. I told almost nobody. I just couldn't do that. I didn't want to even say the words. But you had children, and it's a completely different experience when you're divorcing with children because you are completely wrapped up into couples, friends, because you organically make them through the school that your children go to. Then you have your neighbors, you're friends with your neighbors. You know, the running back and forth to the house stops. You know, if you have a neighbor that stops in, right?
Right.
So you really did. And then you had, as you said, more of a high conflict divorce. So I think this all comes into play, but is there a takeaway? Tell me what you think about this. Be honest. Is there a takeaway that maybe we should tell as few people as possible or just set ourselves up for those we have to tell because it's going to, if we have children, we got to tell those people. It's going to come out. The kids are going to talk about it, right?
Yes.
But expect nothing. Expect nothing back. Expect, just let it be what it is. Maybe, go ahead.
I agree with the expect nothing. I also think it's important, the way that you tell people can happen on a case-by-case basis. So there will be some people, for example, close family members are going to need to know soon, and they're going to need to know it from you. So I'll use myself as an example. There are some family members as well as some close friends, and the people that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis who are going to need to know soon, or it would be easier for them to know soon, and it would be probably best so that you know that you can control the information and how you deliver it. It would be best for me, if I'm a person getting divorced, to deliver the information myself. And I think the best way to deliver the information is in a very straightforward way, in a very clear way, and also to make it fairly brief. And I also think it's important, especially when there are children involved and especially when it's a high conflict situation, to perhaps, if you're going to explain at all, and almost nobody deserves an explanation from you, but if you're going to explain at all, I think it's best to use I statements. You know how our therapists tell us, use I statements, and also to use statements that are non-blaming. So for example, if I was talking to somebody close to me, I might say something like, the marriage, as far as I'm concerned, is over. I told some people that I had fallen out of love with my husband. That wasn't a blaming statement. That was, this is how I feel. This is what happened for me. And we are getting a divorce. And so be honest, be straight up, and also be brief. And I think it's also important to set boundaries, to be clear with people that you aren't planning on providing necessarily full-on intimate details, and that that isn't important to you, and set some boundaries of your own privacy, what you are comfortable talking about and what you're not comfortable talking about, especially if you're delivering the information to someone who is a mutual friend or a mutual family member to you and your spouse. So I wouldn't say tell as few people as possible, but I certainly wouldn't say tell as many people as possible. I think tell on a need-to-know basis. And another thing that I'd like to add is that in certain circumstances, I think it's okay and even recommended to appoint someone who's close to you to be sort of the representative to tell other people rather than you having to tell everyone yourself.
Tell other people in the family?
Yes. So for example, it has to be someone you trust. It has to be someone who will use the messaging that you ask them to use. But it's really helpful when you do have someone you trust. So for example, I gave my mother clearance to tell a few of my aunts and a few of my cousins. I was really overwhelmed and emotional at the time, and I didn't want to be making multiple conversations, but there were some people in my life who I wanted to know that I was going through something so major and so hard. I just didn't want to have to be the person to tell them. So I do recommend that in certain situations where if you don't have the time or the wherewithal or the emotional bandwidth to make an announcement to multiple people, send an ambassador to do it for you.
So yes, understand that for the family. What about the friends? I mean, easily you're going to tell your own coworkers at work. I mean, you know, we each do that, but what about the mutual friends, the couple friends that you have? Do you feel that it's important to explain why, or to just simply say, please don't ask why, I'm just telling you we're getting divorced? Where's that range?
Again, I think it's a case-by-case basis, and it depends on the level of conflict in the divorce. So if it's a more amicable and certainly a mutual divorce, I think that there's a little more space for an explanation to make sense and not be threatening to anyone.
Makes sense, yes.
But if it's a higher level of conflict or an extreme level of conflict, I think it's important to deliver the fact of the divorce happening, but not to deliver much more. And to say, I guess if I were to do it over again, I would use a phrase like, please do your best to trust me that I am making the decisions that are best for me and my children. I don't want to go into a lot of detail because this is a mutual relationship. I love you. I care about you. I don't want to put any pressure on you to take sides or to choose. But I do ask that you trust, based on what you know of me, that I'm doing what's right.
I think that's beautifully said. I really do. And I'm a big proponent, not that it matters, but I'm a big proponent of not sharing intimate details, because you never know how they're going to be received by the other person, and you never know how they're going to come back to haunt people, you know, haunt you, haunt your soon-to-be ex. And why do that if you're having children? The children are the most important things you have to think about. You know, make it the best space possible. But Nikki, you said a couple other things before. You said set people up to be supportive and have something ready to say to people to show them how they can support you. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So with what you just said, Judy, about having something ready to say to people. So in addition to telling friends and family members and potentially colleagues, and by the way, colleagues is a category that I would say maybe minimize how many people you tell and what you tell. That kind of depends, but there are fewer people, I think, in a professional context who need to know. But when you're talking to family members and friends, they're probably going to ask you how they can help. Or hopefully they're going to ask you how they can help. And if they do, my advice is to have something ready to say to them. If you truly don't want any kind of help, then say that. But if there are some kinds of help that you can provide to people to show them how to support you, I would recommend doing it. So if you think it would be helpful for people to check in on you here and there, ask them to check in on you. You know, hey, send me a text and maybe just check in and see how I'm doing. Or, hey, send me a text and tell me how you're doing, because I'm really just involved in my own junk right now and I want to get out of my own head and find out what's happening with you. Or, hey, send me something that's funny. Or ask people straight up if you're going to need some extra childcare. I sure did in the process of my divorce. See if they're willing to pinch hit with childcare. See if they'll take you out to dinner here and there. Get you out of your day-to-day space. If you're looking for a workout buddy, someone to go for walks with, I suggest gathering and using and taking advantage of, in a positive way, people in your life who want to help you. And this leads me to what I wanted to say about positive relationship shifts, because what I experienced, in addition to losing some friends, I also experienced that some of my relationships deepened, and there were some people who stepped up out of nowhere, who I wouldn't necessarily have expected, who really showed up for me and helped me in some big ways. The biggest example I can think of is that while I was going through the divorce process and I was still living with my husband at the time, my son had a birthday and I planned a birthday party for him. And I found out at the last minute from my husband that he was planning on being home on that day. And therefore, it didn't make sense for me to have the party in our home because things were very tense and hostile between us. So I called a friend of mine who was one of the people who really had stepped up, and I asked her if I could have the birthday party for my son at her house. And she said, absolutely. And we had a beautiful birthday party at her house. And I had other friends who stepped up in that way. So this connects to what I was saying about having something ready to say to people, because if you say, hey, I would really appreciate this type of support, and your friend or your family member has an opportunity, it is an opportunity, it's a gift, to ask for a certain type of support, your relationship is probably going to deepen, and they will probably ask you for different types of support in turn. And it is one of the beautiful things about going through a divorce, or at least it was for me.
So you were living with your husband, you just said, the birthday party. And this leads me to another question. People definitely need alone time to organize their thoughts and their feelings before dealing with the world. When we are going through a relationship shift, so filing for divorce is a relationship shift of our own, right? quite often people have to live together for financial reasons until they can organize their finances and set up different households. What do you do about getting alone time? Because it's absolutely necessary to the process.
It is necessary to the process. And when you have children together, it is that much harder to get alone time, depending on how you and your spouse have sort of divided up the time or how cooperative and collaborative you're continuing to be as parents. So one way is to ask for that kind of support from friends. So the same friend who helped me out by hosting my son's birthday party, she also gave me a key to her house and she said, come on in anytime. I was working for myself then, as I still do now. And so I had occasion to be able to go to her house and take a breather and have some alone time during the day while she and her husband and her kids were all out of the house. Another way to get alone time is to ask for it.
Either ask who for it? Your soon-to-be ex?
You can ask your soon-to-be ex. I mean, particularly in an amicable situation.
Right,
that,
of course.
That could work out well. Or you could go to, for example, the home of your parents or of a family member. You could take a weekend and you could get an Airbnb or some other kind of lodging for a few days. You could also designate an area of your home. Let's say if you have a home office or a
space
in your home,
yeah.
Any kind of space. I mean, let's say you have a massage therapist who has a studio who might be able to give you that space for a period of time.
And a massage, of course.
Yeah, massage too.
Anytime.
Yes, but I think what's important to mention here is that you're not going to get space, extra space, until and unless you ask for it. So if the people in your life don't know that you need it and don't know that you want it, then that's a good way to guarantee that you won't get it. So I think support from friends is pretty big here.
And something you just said, people can't really read your mind. People don't really know what you need. And you do have to start vocalizing what you need. So let's not be afraid. Let's not be shy about saying what we need because you're in deep need.
Absolutely.
People are just in deep need when you're getting divorced. So how should we deal with people if they don't comport with our needs?
There are three responses I have to this. The first is let them go. Let them go. What I mean by that is if there's somebody who's not comporting with your needs, or especially if there's somebody who is doing quite the opposite of what you need,
Even innocently,
or not innocently, because there are situations where people might mess with your needs, knowing what you need, and do the exact opposite, it's important to let them go. And what I mean by that is create distance yourself, or find a way to accept that they are creating distance, or explicitly let the relationship go. And although it is very painful, obviously, to be going through ending a marriage, sometimes it's also important to let go of other relationships that may or may not surround your marriage that have not been particularly healthy for you.
Well, isn't it interesting that when we're going through crises, a death of somebody very close to us, an accident that we may have, it really, your friends react many times the way we think they're going to react, and other times completely differently, unexpectedly behaving in a certain way. And I guess for me, the ultimate optimist and philosopher, experiences in our lives are there to teach us things, and maybe one of the things it teaches us is the testing of relationships and how useful some relationships are over others. And mm-hmm. I don't mean that to be a negative, judgmental. It's just, I think, life that just creates different responses from people, and we have to accept what they are.
Yes. And it's also important, I think, if someone isn't comporting with our needs, a lot of times it really is worth checking in with them. Because as you said, Judy, it could be completely innocent. We can't expect that people know our needs. And we also can't expect, once we've said what we need, we can't expect that people necessarily know how to meet that need. They could feel really awkward about it. They could be really resistant to it. So I think if it's someone who's really important to you and you're finding that they're not being supportive of you, either in the way that you're asking or in a way that you're not asking, I mean, let's just say it's your brother or your sister and you thought that they'd be right there for you and they're just really kind of not. People say a lot with their silence, but it's important not to make assumptions about people, about what's going on with them. And so if it's somebody who you have a close relationship with and who you, in your core, you believe that they love you and they love you unconditionally and they want the best for you, it's really worth a check-in, I think. And to say, hey, I know that this is a rough time. I'm going through a hard time and this must be hard for you for whatever reason. Can we have a check-in? Because I miss you. Make yourself vulnerable and say, I miss you. I really would love to be in a more, see you more or have more support from you. How can I be sensitive to what you need? And just breaking the ice like that can go so far, because the opposite of doing that is you making assumptions about how they feel, them making assumptions about how you feel. And before you know it, there's some kind of family feud going on.
Well, that and some people can't see things the way you see them. So here's my little example. At the time I was going through my divorce, which was in the early 90s, I was working for my brother in his company. My ex-husband, we had not gotten divorced yet. We were in the middle of it. And then we both worked for the circus, and that's how we met. He took off with this other circus as he filed for divorce, and then he couldn't meet the time deadlines to file different forms, and the case got dismissed. In the off season, he came to visit me in Los Angeles. He lived in New England. He visited me in Los Angeles, decided he wanted to try and get back together, which I allowed because I just wanted to see. And he became the secretary at the company my brother owned. So it was just my brother, me, and Clark Weigel. Lovely man. Clark Weigel is a wonderful human being, and I want to keep saying that. But I found it very difficult. So we refiled in Los Angeles. He did it. And I just couldn't come to work every day with Clark Weigel there, as lovely as he is. And what a great job he did as the secretary. By the way, computers were entering the office at that time. He read the manual and taught himself computer. He is Mensa. He is brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I went to my brother and I said, look, I mean, this is very difficult because he's doing a great job and you like him. They really got along well together. But I'm having an extremely difficult time coming to work. I need work to be my refuge. I need work to get my mind off of this, because at night my mind is all on the divorce. And my brother looked at me and said, oh, you can hang in there. It should be okay. Now, I did not hate my brother for that. In that moment, I realized he was doing the best he could. He didn't have the emotional disposition. He didn't have the ability to empathize. And I said, okay, I can't blame him. Now, how am I going to take care of myself? How am I going to deal with this? And I just had to do the best I could at shutting out that. I had to make a lot of sales appointments for myself to get myself out of the office. So I had my own experience with that. And that's what I want to share with you and the listeners, is that sometimes the people in your life that have to remain in your life, like your family, they just don't have the emotional ability to understand what you're going through, and don't blame them. You then have to do something different for yourself.
Absolutely, 100%. And that gets back to trying to have empathy, striving for empathy, even though you're going through something extraordinarily painful, there are going to be some people who will be helpful, and there are going to be some people who aren't. And that is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, it just is what it is. It's a case-by-case situation, and it teaches us. We have resources we have to call on that we didn't even know we had. You know, it makes us better people, hopefully, if we approach it that way, and maybe have a lot of pastry to eat. I don't know. That's my go-to, would be pastry. Okay. Back to questions. So what else can you recommend in terms of extra help to get through the relationship? You know, there are people we can employ. There are professionally. Could you go through that a little bit?
You bet.
I mean, you did, but.
Yeah. Well, I think number one, know that it's a time to ask for support. Know that it's a time to receive support. The different types of support that I like to talk about, because there are types of support that people may encourage you to get that ultimately isn't going to help you much. It isn't going to be so supportive for you.
You mean like therapy, or what do you mean?
What I mean is some people might suggest that you be part of a divorce support group, for example.
Oh.
And maybe that's not your scene. Okay. Or maybe somebody recommend that you get therapy, and, well, therapy, I think, personally, is very important. So if you can even come close to getting yourself to a therapist, I highly recommend doing it.
If you can afford it, too.
And if you can afford it, yeah. Yes. But what's most important is to acknowledge that support and help are important. To acknowledge that you're going through a difficult time, and to get the support that's most meaningful and actually supportive for you. So one type of support that you can get is expert help. You can get support from a therapist, from a coach, from an acupuncturist, from a spiritual leader, the head of your church, the head of your synagogue, your congregation. You can get support from a personal trainer, different types of support that help you in your physical, mental, and spiritual health.
And emotional.
And emotional health. So expert types of help, energy workers, healers. Another type of support, I want to mention two others, is a kind of support that I call aspirational support, which means that you find people who have gone through what you're going through. So they've gone through a divorce, and they've gotten to the other side, and they have triumphed. And their life now, they're back in a place of joy, and they've put the puzzle pieces back together. So this is a kind of support that can help you look ahead and create a vision for where you want to be ultimately. So you can see, okay, you can say, I know some people who are helping me who've been there before, and they've gotten through it. And then another kind of help and support is support from people who are going through what you're going through right now. So finding some folks, potentially a divorce support group run by a therapist, run by a social worker or a psychologist, or simply asking friends or friends of friends, hey, who knows some people who have gone through this process? Because for me, when I went through a divorce, my kids were very young, and really none of our friends, nobody that I really knew, was going through a divorce at that time. And so I kind of had to work to find somebody who was. But that can be really helpful, because these are people you can commiserate with, and you can provide resources to each other and support for each other.
Please commiserate. I'm going to add this just from being a mediator. Please commiserate with people who are doing well. If you commiserate with people who are absolutely miserable, it's kind of going to bring you down. I mean, maybe for a minute you could be the First Wives Club, which is fun, and the movie was great, and maybe this is something we should do. Put a couple of these movies on and start laughing, because we have to laugh. We
yes.
just have to laugh, or we will blow up. So yeah, the First Wives Club is actually quite funny to watch. There's got to be something on the male end that addresses that. But if you commiserate, and I listen to this, people call me, listen, I was talking to my friend, and this is what they're going through, but they're filing all these things in court, and I'm like, stop. We are amicable here. We are going to look at ways to not file in court, and we're going to do it through my bailiwick communication. And so I start talking to people about changing their communication, which means changing your mindset so that you can uplift yourself. So I you know, my thing is go to with uplifting people. I would, you know, I think that's really, really helpful. I wanted to ask you, since this is a podcast about amicable divorces, I know you had conflict, and there's so many other things I want to ask you, but we're running close to our end time. How does everything we just talked about today play into having an epic comeback?
The framework that I've created for my coaching program and my company, which is called the Epic Comeback, has three pillars. And one of those pillars is reclaiming and rebuilding a sense of community. So support. Making sure that the people who surround us on a day-to-day basis and beyond are people who love us, people who know us as we would have them know us, and people who support us unconditionally. And so the epic comeback process is one of making sure that you curate an interpersonal and social life that supports you, that brings you joy, that makes you laugh, and that helps you to create the life coming out of divorce that you want to create. We are who we spend our time with, and we have choices as adults as to who we are going to spend our time with. We have that choice. And it really, for some people, it's harder than for others to make new friends, to get out there. But it is possible. And it can be so helpful, especially in a high conflict situation, to go out there and to join a new organization, to start volunteering, to increase the flow of new people, like-minded people in your life. It's a huge part of making an epic comeback in your life after something as painful and life-changing as a divorce.
I love that. Again, the last sentence on my confirmation emails when I bring people into the office to either mediate or file for divorce is divorce is a new beginning. And you're absolutely right. The landscape of our social fabric does change. And we can change it any way we want. I mean, you can take salsa dance lessons. You can join groups that you couldn't get to when you were married because you wanted to do couple things. So until you're a couple again, you get to explore those things that you've wanted to do, one or two things that you just didn't have the opportunity to do. And when in volunteering, I mean, that was a wonderful thing you said, because volunteering gets you outside of your neediness. Now you're giving to other people who need. And with any volunteer activity that I've done, you just feel cleansed. You feel fresh again. And so these were excellent suggestions that you made. Thank you very much. And so that's great to know that that's part of the Epic Comeback program, reestablishing your community. And this was a conversation about shifts in relationships.
Yes, and I enjoyed it so thoroughly. Thank you, Judy.
So, Nikki, my pleasure. And how can people get in touch with you to enjoy their Epic Comeback?
The best way to get in touch with me is to go to my website, which is theepiccomeback.com.
Theepiccomeback.com. Excellent. You've been listening to Nikki Bruno talk about shifts in relationships as a result of divorce. And you have been listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host, amicable divorce expert. I would encourage you to subscribe to this podcast so that you always get the episodes as they come up. And if anybody would like to get in touch with me, you may at my email address, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com. Thank you so much for the time you have given to this, and I look forward to our next episode. Take care.